Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, a show where we break down the ongoing news and latest stories from around the NBA. BJ, we had a, and the show is brought to you by NBA 2K25, of course. We had a comment on our YouTube channel yesterday that I would like to begin this show by addressing. It was from another brother called Mo. He says, from Mo to Mo, I enjoy your podcast and appreciate the thoughtful discussions. However, the intro feels a bit immature and could benefit from a more professional tone. This would help make a stronger first impression on new listeners. So here I am with a sensible introduction. And Mo, I appreciate your comment. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate everyone who listens. I appreciate the feedback as well. But there is one thing that I do have to say in response. You know the vibes! Do you want to know why the intro is like this? Do you want to be, you know why the intro is like this? Because this is our show where we can be ourselves. And if you do not like me saying, you know the vibes, then guess what? You're probably not going to like the rest of the show. You're probably not going to like listening to me. You know what I'm saying? I want to make sure that every day when people hear in their headphones or out of their speakers, when they hear, you know the vibes, they know for the next 30, 45, 60 minutes that they don't have to worry about what's going on in their lives. They don't have to worry about what's going on in the world because they're going to hear some real basketball stuff. But BJ, I want to get your take. What's your take? Is it time for me to grow up a little bit, stop wearing hoodies and shouting, you know the vibes? Should I come in a suit like Scott does every week? Should I come in a shirt with a tie? Should I come with a formal introduction? What's your take on it, OG?
You know, Mo, I have one thing to say. I want Mo to be real, and I want him to come with no gimmicks. And to anyone who, you know, if you judge a book, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover. If you can say listening to the entire show and that is your take, I think I would consider that.
Yeah. I think it's good feedback. I think it's valid. But
yeah, but if you're saying what you're saying, you know, that's fine. That's fair. As you know, Mo, I listen and I move on. But thank you. And then let's move on now.
I find the whole concept of judging a book by its cover pretty interesting, you know. This is slightly off topic. This is not basketball, but I'm going to share this with you and I'm going to share this with our listeners real quick before we begin. I find it fascinating how people make judgments on others on the way that they dress or the way that they speak or certain different factors that play into their mind. I recently went for a dinner with some really good friends of mine, some of my best friends in the world. We all went for a dinner. And at the dinner, one of my friends, you know, they brought their wives and whatnot. Obviously, I went by myself. Because I can't just bring anyone to these things. So anyway, we were talking about school and university and college, as you guys say, and growing up. And one of my friend's wives asked me, Mo, did you, how far did you get in your education? And I said, what do you mean? Like, she was like, did you go to university? I was like, yeah. I was a straight A student my whole life. And she looked like shocked, right? And she goes, what did you study at university? I said, oh, I went to law school, qualified from law school, right? And she didn't believe me. And she refused to believe me until like my other friends verified that it was true. And I said, well, if you really want to have your mind blown, you know, I had an offer from the University of Cambridge, which is one of the best universities in the entire world. And everyone at the table started laughing and they accused me of lying. Now, one thing I don't ever do, BJ, is lie. I might hurt people's feelings, but one thing I won't do is lie. And the entire table was laughing and making jokes, thinking I'm lying. I had to go in my emails and pull out emails from 2013 to prove them wrong, that I turned down a place at one of the world's best universities because my philosophy is if I want to be successful in life, I want it to be off the back of my own hard work, not because I went to a certain place and met a certain person. So I just found that pretty funny that people out there think that I am an idiot and not an intelligent individual. I consider
What's that story, Mo? We've never shared this. You've never shared that story with me. What is the story? How come you didn't go to the University of Cambridge?
So I didn't really want to go to university ever. BJ, I wanted to be a professional basketball player. I was in talks with some teams in Europe about playing over there. So I didn't want to apply for university, but because I had like the best grades in my school, the teachers made me apply. So I did the applications and whatever, went for the interviews. The interviews were fascinating because I don't think that they've ever met someone like me, you know, in these prestigious places, because I went as authentically myself, right? So I'm in the interview, they're asking me all these different types of questions, and I'm just answering them. The interview went so well, in fact, that the requirement for entry was an A star and two A's. They said to me, "You know what? We just want three A's from you. We don't even care if you get an A star or not. We just want three A's, and we'll let you in." And then I respectfully did not want to go to university because I thought I was going to go to Europe and play basketball. So I said no to all the universities, and then tore my meniscus, and the teams I was talking to were no longer interested, and then that's when I had to figure out the rest of my life. Because I thought if they're offering me a place now, I can go play ball and come back in 5, 10 years, they'll still be offering me a place. But it didn't work out that way. I didn't go and play basketball. I ended up, you know, becoming a writer, then becoming TV presenter, then now doing this podcast. And I think it worked out pretty well for me. The other factor with that is, you know, I went for the interview and I met all the other students who were applying in the interview process. And I really felt out of place. You know, I didn't really have anything in common with anyone. I didn't really, not that I didn't get along with them, because I can get along with anyone, but I didn't feel that that was a place where I could spend 3 years of my life and enjoy my life. Do you know what I mean? BJ, you know, I like to have a good time. The people there, respectfully to them, as intelligent and as accomplished as they may be, they didn't seem like my kind of people. Which, you know, when I tell this story to people, they think I'm an idiot. And I should have gone, and so on and so forth. But as I said before, if you're going to succeed in life, it doesn't matter where you go, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as you put in the work, you will find a way to be successful. And I've found a way to talk about basketball for a living, which in my perspective is success because I get to do what I love. If I had accepted that place, done that degree, I might be trying to become prime minister. I might be an accountant in like some mad accounting firm or whatever it might be. But I would have been miserable because I wouldn't be doing something related to what I love most in the world, and that is basketball. So that is the path that has brought me here today. But so I do find it quite funny that people hear the way that I speak and the way that I dress and the way that I carry myself, and they think I'm an idiot. And I like to think that I'm not an idiot.
No, no,
And
no,
whether
that's
it's academically, whether it's street smarts or whatever it is, I've been in the top tier my whole life, and I'm gonna stay in the top tier my whole life. And people who think otherwise, I just sit back and laugh. Like, I like to be underestimated. You know what I'm saying? You can underestimate me. It's like when I go for meetings with brands, right? I remember going for meetings with brands, and like they want a certain company, I'm not gonna say who, they gave me this contract to sign. And I started reading the contract, and they said, "What are you doing? You just need to sign a document." I said, "Well, rule number one is you never sign something without reading it first." And then I gave them back a whole bunch of revisions on the on the contract, and they were like, "Excuse me, how do you know this? Like, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Do you think I was just coming here to sign my name on a piece of paper for a little bit of money? No, that's not how this is going. I know what I'm doing." And they were like, "How do you know this, though?" I said, "I went to law school." They were like, "What?" They didn't believe me either. No one seems to believe anything about me. But that's life, you know. Don't underestimate anyone.
No, you just like I'm saying, you never judge, you know. You don't know. You don't know who people are. But no, thanks for sharing that story. I didn't know that story, Mo. I learned
Appreciate
something
listening.
new.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned something new all the time.
I think underestimating people based on what they look like or how they carry themselves is interesting because, you know, a lot of people in the media, especially, you know, they looked at this fat man from Serbia who doesn't apparently seem to like basketball. However, last night he became the fastest player to reach 15,000 points, 7,500 rebounds, and 5,000 assists. The three-time MVP accomplished the feat in just 709 games, surpassing Larry Bird's previous record of 799 games to reach those totals. So that's pretty impressive from the Denver Nuggets. And not only was Jokic impressive last night, you know, we spoke about this on Monday with Scott, but Jamal Murray seemed to bounce back
Jamal Murray, I
in a
thought, was
big
maybe he
way.
was, yeah, he was listening to the show. That's what I thought. Yeah, good for him. Good for
Yeah.
Jamal Murray. Good for
Yeah,
him.
I was really happy to see that performance. Obviously Dallas have got their injury struggles continue. Kyrie Irving was back, but still no Luka Doncic. And I think Derek Lively played only 3 or 4 minutes before going off with an injury. But Jamal finished with 45 points in the win. And it was interesting, starting alongside Russell Westbrook, it continues to go well for Denver. If Jamal can find some of this rhythm and keep it going, then it's going to be great for the Denver Nuggets moving forwards. Last night as well, Zion Williamson continues to another person who's been maybe underestimated a little bit by the media because they seem to be obsessed with his food consumption. He almost had a triple double with 21, 9, and 7, which was good for the Pelicans. And they picked up a win over the Chicago Bulls. If we say it every time, if they can get healthy, they can start getting their season a little bit back on track. But you know what? I was the overarching feeling for me yesterday, right? I tuned in to the first few minutes of the Sixers versus the Thunder, right? And I just feel bad for the Sixers fans. The Sixers and the Celtics, I'm a Celtics fan. They have a rivalry and this goes on longer than I've been alive. And it's like a huge rivalry. But at this point in my life, I actually feel really bad for anyone who supports the 76ers because you look at their starting lineup of Reggie Jackson, Eric Gordon, Rickie Council IV, Kelly Oubre Jr., and Gershon Yabusele, with a bench unit of Jeff Doughton Jr., Justin Edwards, Adam Boner, and Pete Nance. For a casual NBA fan, you might have heard of like two or three of those guys at a push. But this is a team that employs three max contract players on their roster. And I just kind of feel sorry for the Sixers fans who kind of pay their hard-earned money. Not to say that, the guys playing aren't good players, but that's not really what the fan base has signed up for. The fans in the arena were booing them with a timeout. I think there was a timeout with like 2 or 3 minutes left in the first quarter, and the Thunder were up 32 to 11. That's when I stopped watching that game. But I just feel bad for the Sixers fans, man. I just feel bad. When will it ever get better? When will it get better? Are they going to have to do another process of tanking? Like, what are they going to do here? Because they've got Paul George on the max for 4 more years. Maxey's a promising young player, but Embiid, I guess he's kind of reaching the end of his prime, because when he does play, it's fantastic, but his availability is just not there. What's the direction for the Sixers moving forward here?
Wow, you said, we just dove into a massive question here. What's the direction? Well, Mo, I think you just identified what's the direction. Okay, first, what's the availability of those three players that we just named? Let's start at the top. Okay, what let's start there. Now, there has to be an overriding philosophy that has to be generated within the organization from top to bottom, meaning the ownership group, the executives, the head coach, and the players. Okay, because this isn't just one thing. That one player that we, those three players that we just discussed, which are max players, okay, that's a shared responsibility for the availability now that comes with, those contracts. So the first thing is, what is our overwhelming or overriding philosophy that we're going to share? Are we going to be a team that does what? Who are we? What's our identity? What do we look like? Well, the first thing, Mo, we got to figure out who's available. That's how about let's start there. Let's just start. We have to have availability on the floor. This is not a talent issue with this group. This isn't like, as you just said, when, Joel Embiid plays, you can argue he is without question one of the top five players in the NBA. This kid, Tyrese Maxey, fantastic. Paul George, when he plays, he's an all-star caliber player.
I would disagree with that at this point of his career.
That's okay. That's fair. When he plays, if Paul George were to
He's
play
played
70,
20, he's played 26 games this season, averaging 16.8 points, 4.7 assists, 6 rebounds, which is not max contract numbers.
so when he has played throughout his career and when he is available, he has put up all-star caliber numbers. He's been an all-star multiple times. Now, wherever he's at in his career now, let me see it first. Let me get a sample size of about 70, 75 games before I say that. He could be battling whatever he's battling now. Who knows what it is? I don't know. But whatever it is, let me get a sample size of 75 games before I determine that. Because it's very hard to replace players. And if he's giving me 16 points a night in 75 games, and Joel Embiid is giving me 25 to 30 a night in 75 games, and Tyrese Maxey is giving me 25 plus, well, that's pretty good. I can accept that. The real issue is these players aren't available. Now, Tyrese Maxey is just, he's been beat up. So I'm excluding him from that because of his age, what he has done. But I think he had a hamstring or injury earlier in the season, and he's been battling some things ever since. We have to first create a culture there where everyone buys in, especially the people at the top, because financially, we know, Mo, that if we tie up our money into one or two players and they're not available, this is what happens. So this is not a secret. There's nothing to feel bad about. This is a decision that was made internally, and it has not panned out because those players aren't available. They're just not available.
Do you
It's
know what
just
I
as
find?
simple
Do you
as
know what I
that.
find funny? Is I would argue that the Sixers would be in a better position if they'd just paid James Harden what he wanted. Because you see what James Harden's doing for the Clippers, carrying the team while Kawhi Leonard is out. If you know that your superstar player in Joel Embiid is going to miss a lot of games, a player like James Harden is more than capable of carrying a team, at least to stay, in the playoff mix whilst your star player gets healthy, right?
But
Because
I don't think
the
that's fair
Sixers
to
right
Mo to
now
say
are
that.
15 and 23. Do
I
you
don't think
don't
that's
think they'd be in
fair.
a better position if they had James Harden instead of Paul George?
I'm gonna say it and then I'll let you respond. First, this organization is gonna have to find an overriding philosophy that they're gonna abide by. I just happen to think that this team and its best perimeter player should be Tyrese Maxey. I don't think there should be any interference with his growth and trajectory in this league moving forward, based on what I can see from afar. I don't know his practice habits. I've heard great things. I don't know Tyrese Maxey. Based on what I can see from this perspective,
I've spoke to Tyrese. His you would PJ, if you spoke to Tyrese or if you went to his workouts, you would love every second of it
okay,
because that
and
kid works insanely hard.
I don't think there should be any interference with his trajectory in this league and what he could provide to a team for the next 5 to 7 years. That's just my opinion. James Harden is James Harden, but I don't see that James Harden being able to play off the ball and being able to defer to who I, you said, what would I do? I'm going to make sure that Tyrese Maxey is the predominant ball handler on my team because he plays the way I think, you should play as a lead guard in this league. Play downhill, you got speed, quickness. He's a willing passer. He shoots, he defends, da 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 da. He's in the right age that I want to be in, youth. He can play, he should be able to play a minimum of 70, 75 games, maybe gives me 82 if we're lucky. And I think he just seems like a great kid. Again, I'm just watching. I don't want him to defer to James Harden because James Harden is a dominant ball handler. He needs the ball. I admire what he does because he plays. I like that. I just don't want to have a team where he's going to dominate and dictate how we're going to play because that's what he's done at every stop. And that's what he's done now. And I'm okay with that, but I'm not going to say that I was willing to defer with a team where I have Maxey. Not me.
I hear what you're saying. Right now, though, Norman Powell leads the Clippers in scoring, not James Harden.
Okay.
James Harden has proven that he can coexist with another guard, with Chris Paul. They got to what, game seven of the Western Conference Finals in Houston when he had Chris Paul alongside him. When the Brooklyn Nets were fully healthy, James Harden and Kyrie Irving in the backcourt worked pretty well when they were on the court together and Kyrie wasn't suspended or whatever was going on. So I feel like the reputation that James Harden has, where it just has to be him with the ball on every possession, so on and so forth, I don't think is necessarily true. I think there were times in his career where it was true, but he's also shown that he can play alongside other players. And I think if you were in a situation where, okay, we know Joel's not going to be here for 50 games, for example, Tyrese, James, you got to work this out between you. I think that would have worked out a lot better than what Paul George has added to this team.
That's fair, Mo. That's fair. You asked me a question, and I gave you, I think that's fair. I
Worry,
don't have a
it's
problem
not
with
first
that.
take where we're gonna have to shout and scream at each
No. I think that's fair. But
other.
as I said, you have to have a philosophy within your group and live with that. I'm not deferring. I'm not deferring because ultimately it's very important for me to say it. To say this, I'm trying to win the whole thing. And I have to be able to defend, I have to be able to rebound, and I have to be able to share the ball. I want to build a team in which is going to be a reflection of a team that has the that have the principles to win the entire thing. That's just me. But I get it. If you're saying, we just want to be a
Well,
team
if
that
you want to win
plays.
the whole thing, right? If you want to win the whole thing, you've got to get to the playoffs. Right now, the Sixers are 11th, 15 and 23, right? We're at the 50% mark of the season, and they're in 11th place in the East. They're behind the Bulls, the Hawks, the
Well,
Pistons.
what? Let's look at the team instead of saying what we think. What's their philosophy? When you look at this group, you have perhaps one of the fastest guys in the league. Then you have a center, and then you have Paul George. Well, what's their philosophy? What if you said right now, what is the philosophy of this team? You would say what?
It's impossible to tell because every night you don't know who's playing.
But
Like every night we've seen
what
different
would you
lineups, different
say?
starting
What
units.
would you say with the team as it's currently assembled? What were they attempting to do if everyone was healthy? What would you say?
If everyone's healthy on this team, most of it runs through Joel. If Maxi can run in transition, that's there. But if it's in the half court, it's going through JoJo. I want to be a troll and say he's trying to get free throws, but they're running through Joel as their centerpiece, right? Because
Okay.
if you're playing with Maxey, who's a fast-paced guard like that, you ideally want a rim-running big man who's going to block shots, sprint up the court, and catch lobs. Like imagine a
Okay.
prime DeAndre
So
Jordan,
you
right?
think the overwhelming thought is JoJo
But this
is the
is Joel's
centerpiece to this?
team, yeah.
Okay. All right. So this is Joel's team. Okay. All right. Let's say it's Joel's team. Well, how are we going to play? Are we going to play fast with Joel? Are we
You
going to
can't play fast
play?
with him.
Okay. So we're a half court team. Okay. So we're a half court team. We're going to play through Joel and we're going to provide, if you're going to have a center and you're going to play through your center, that means you need spacing on the floor. So let's look at the team that they currently have. Is this a team where you're saying, Joel Embiid, we need you to play a minimum of 70 games? We need shooters and spacers around him because if he's going to be Joel Embiid, he's going to need space to operate predominantly below the free throw line, right? It's not necessarily we're just going to stick him on the post and say that's the only place. He's going to have some games where he shoots, let's say five, six threes or
Yeah, he'll shoot the
whatever they do
mid-range, shoot
today.
the
He shoot the
face-ups.
mid-range. So you're saying this team was built around Joel Embiid, half court, more half court than full court, and we have spacers and shooters around him. We're also going to say defensively that we probably, want to have players where Joel, because of his ability to defend when healthy, would be a team where, they should be able to defend a little bit, extend just a little bit, maybe not as much because Joel is not going to play full court defense, but at least they should be a good defensive team. So if that is their philosophy, It's dependent on one important ingredient, the availability of the best player. I don't have reason to believe, I would love to think that he would play 70 games, but all indicators show me that he probably won't be available for those 70 games. So therefore, maybe the starting point for this organization would be, let's develop or at least agree upon a philosophy in which would not be dependent on something that hasn't proven to be, it's highly unlikely that he's going to play 70, 75 games. I mean, he came out before the season and said he's not going to play back-to-back games. Therefore, what do we expect? I'm not expecting anything from Philadelphia. The reason I'm not expecting, because I haven't found a way to be excellent at anything if I'm not present or there. I don't care what you do. I don't care how you manage that. You have to perfect your craft each and every day. That requires me to work, to be at practice, be available, and go through the ups and downs of my performance. But I get to, at the very least, I have to be there. So for me, that's a non-starter. That's a non-starter for me. If you're asking me, that's a non-starter. And the reason it's a non-starter is because I haven't found another way to be excellent at anything when I'm not there. Like, this is just simple math for me. Just it's that's a non-starter. I love Joel Embiid's talent. I love him. He does everything that you could want with a big guy. However, when I look at it, I go, I probably have to build a team knowing that if he's there, we're great. If he's not there, I got to play a different style altogether. Why?
So,
Why do I say this? Because, in my opinion, Tyrese Maxey has to be the best player. He not only does he have to be the best perimeter player, he has to be the best player because he's in his prime. And if he's in his prime, there are two qualities in which I'm going to surround Tyrese Maxey with. I'm going to surround him with other players that can play at his speed and play at his pace. And I'm going to utilize something that I know is elite. That young man has elite speed. He has nice size at the position. He can play beyond the three-point line. He can drive to the basket. And I'm going to allow him to play and dominate with screens. Isolations and just play at a pace that most teams will say, oh, wow, do I really want to get in a track meet with him and have a team that's able to play with him? That's me.
Yeah.
But I'm just watching it from afar, though.
So let me ask you this. The Sixers, we all knew that Embiid won't be readily available this season. Same with the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard won't be readily available this season. Do you think the Clippers have done a better job of constructing a team and having a philosophy that factors in the fact that their best player won't be available to the level in which you would hope?
This is what I learned from the Clippers. This is what I've learned. The Clippers have gone through this ever since they acquired Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And then this is when I think, again, I'm just sitting at a Clipper game and I realize Russell Westbrook saved their season just by being available.
When he was
And
there.
then when he was playing for the Clippers. Russell Westbrook had one of the more interesting years that year because he suddenly provided leadership off the bench because of one thing: he was available. The coaching staff could depend on his availability night in and night out, and he suddenly became not just a complimentary player, he became their leader when he made the decision to go to the bench. He made that decision, if I recall it or remember it correctly. And when that happened, I realized, or I was reminded of why I have a philosophy of depth, because you don't know which one of these players are going to evolve, and you don't know where the leadership is going to come from. You would hope it comes from your best player, but truly, it comes from all the players. And Russell Westbrook in that moment just reminded me of why I always say, you hear me say this all the time, you better have at least 10 players. who are available every night. Build your team. You can't build your team around one guy. If that one guy is available, that's just icing. That's a bonus. But if they're not, if they don't play well in stretches, you better still be able to compete. And I remember I specifically, because I was at a game and I said, that's interesting because Russell is the only player that he can really trust, meaning Tyronn Lue, Coach Lue. And when I saw that, I said, Russell still has the competitive spirit necessary to play at an elite level. And it's not an accident that he's performing at this level because I saw it then. I saw it. I was there and I remember thinking that. Now, the reason I'm pointing that out is because you have to be there. You have to be in the fight. You have to stay in the fight. There's no way around success. There's no way around it. You can't cheat it. You can't cheat conditioning. You can't cheat competing. Is it painful at times? Yes. Will you lose? Yes. Does it guarantee success because you showed up and practiced 2 hours every day? No, it doesn't. But what it does show that you're willing to accept whatever result you get from going out there playing night in and night out. Let Russell Westbrook be an example for all young people of how to persevere through the ups and downs of life, not just this basketball thing we're talking about. Through life, there's going to be some highs, there's going to be some lows. That young man has never wavered on effort and energy.
Never. And now
Okay.
you see the results.
Okay. Now you see what Coach Lue, I would be fascinated right now as I'm talking to hear Coach Lue's response to Russell Westbrook. Because in my opinion, he saved their season. And now it's no accident that, the guys who are playing are doing so well. The guy, Norm Powell was coming off the bench. And suddenly now, Norm Powell, raise your hand if you had Norm, as your leading scorer for the
Norm
Clippers
had it because he did
this
that. I remember he had that quote. I don't know the exact quote, but he was like, "We don't need Paul George." That's basically what he said.
year. Raise your hand. I didn't see people saying, well, yeah, I think we're going to be okay. Norm's going to be the lead. I didn't see it.
People are questioning whether he should be an all-star this season. Because
He should be.
if Paul George was an
I said
all-star
it.
before, I don't see why Norman Powell shouldn't be.
Norm, let's give a little love here to Norm. Norm here shows up. He's always been one of those players. He shows up and he just plays. And now, he's done it off the bench. He's done it as a starter. He's done it as a, let's say he's not in their top three, but he's always been, he's there, he's maybe he's a four starter. Now he's one or two, the first or second option on the offensive end. He's shooting lights out and he has his confidence. He's never lost his confidence along his entire path. So, there are great players all around the league and many of them, they defer because that's what's needed on that team. That's why I never underestimate these players because it may not show up in the box score. You may not get highlighted about what you're doing for your group. But for people who are watching the game like we watch it, he's a valuable, valuable piece on a championship caliber team. And by the way, he's a pretty good defender. So maybe the Clippers knew something we didn't know. That's why I'm always hesitant before I start going off and saying things because I'm not there every day and I know this. And let this also serve. As you don't know, it may be the Clippers knew something we didn't know. Maybe they did. I would hope they do because they're there every day. That's why I pay the people in those buildings the respect and just say, I just talk about what I can see. And that's why I love players to play. So that way I can talk more. But when they don't play, I have nothing really to say because I don't know the reason why they're not playing.
That's fascinating, the way that the Clippers have managed to ride the storm but the Sixers haven't. Anyway, looking ahead to tonight, there's a few games that have caught my eye. The
Okay.
Grizzlies and the Spurs. the Rockets and the Nuggets. I would love to say the Warriors and the Timberwolves, but the Warriors continue to disappoint. But that
Why do they disappoint? Everyone says they disappoint.
because of the
What are
way they
we really
started the
expecting?
season.
Oh, okay.
They started the
So,
season 12 and 3, first place in the West. And
oh, okay.
now they're 19 and 20.
Isn't that about where we had them this year or no?
12th in the West. No, I had them like 8, not 12th.
Okay,
12th
so
is
we were.
outside of the play-in. 12th is a lottery team.
But the eighth team is 21-18. Okay, they are okay, 2 games out of the eighth spot. Okay, isn't this about where we had them? Like, I don't understand why we're disappointed. Like, all right, Mo had them eight. Okay, so they're 2 games off the pace.
But they started 12 and 3, right?
Oh, so you were seduced by the 12-3.
No, because if you take that 12 and 3, okay, since then, they're what? 7 and 17.
Okay, so where did you have them?
So are they trending
You
in the
had
right
them eighth.
direction?
You had them in eighth place this year. They're 2 games off of the eighth place.
Yeah.
So this is where we had them. They are sitting exactly where we said they were probably going to be. All right, I'll play in somewhere around there. All right, you had a good start of the season. Okay. Well, if you're going to be a 500 team, basically what we said, then they're roughly a 500 team. Now, if Mo would have said, I think they're a top four team, and they start off 12-3, you would have looked like a genius. But you said you had them around. You just said it. You just said that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you have a good stretch. You have a bad stretch. You're a 500 team. That means you're winning every other game. So this is what they're doing. You said you can't have it both ways, Mo. That's what you said. So they're
Yeah.
2 games off. They're 2 games off of 500. That's about right for them.
Okay.
Unless you're saying they're a top four team, they're not better
But
than the Minnesota.
we expect them to improve when they got Dennis Schroeder.
No, I didn't.
Did you not?
No, I didn't. I didn't think. Why would they improve?
I mean, when we spoke about it, you had nothing but positive things to say.
I like Dennis Schroeder.
Yes.
I really like Dennis Schroeder. Okay, but when I look at Dennis Schroeder and Steph Curry, okay, I'm looking at it going, all right, that was a trade. But again, I have said this since the beginning. I'm not going to change this. The version of Steph Curry that was the elite version that we all acknowledge, that we all say, which allowed him to be one of the greatest shooters, one of the greatest combo players, okay? You have to have the other player that complements what he doesn't do. And what he doesn't do well, or at an elite level that he does on the offensive end, is that player would defend the other team's leading lead guard, which would force Steph Curry to be off the ball. When I look at Dennis Schroeder and I look at Steph Curry, that's a small backcourt. They're basically playing Draymond Green, who is, let's be kind and say he's 6'7", as a center position. That's a small team. I don't see what everyone else sees. Steph Curry at this stage is probably going to play lead guard more, which is going to require him to guard the lead guards and the other team's lead guards. And there's matchups and things that has to happen. So I understand that if you're going to have Steph Curry, that you're going to have to allow him to be Steph Curry, which is he's going to have to be off the ball. So yes, on one hand, they made a decision to put another ball handler out there so Steph Curry can be Steph Curry on the offensive end. However, Mo, I come back to the game. Defensively, they're going to have some gaps. And when you can't get consistent stops, it's going to be hard for you to consistently win games. That's just what it is. Like, this isn't a criticism. So this team is going to have some inconsistencies on the defensive end because of the size of their team. So when you see their ups and downs, it's not because of the offensive, it's not on the offensive end. What has been their Achilles heel for the last two or three seasons? Defensively, right? They openly talked about it. If we look at a team, and we're looking now at Golden State, when the Golden State Warriors were the version that we all come to, appreciate in that championship run they had, they were the best or one of the best defensive teams in the league. That's not the case now. It's just really simple.
Well, right now they're defensively, their defense rate, they're eighth in the league.
Yeah, that's fine. That's great. That's terrific. I'm not saying they are improved on the defensive end. But when they play against teams with size in the backcourt, it's a problem. Like, but you live with your problems. No team is perfect. You live with it. Klay Thompson was the perfect complement
Steph Curry.
to Steph Curry. No ifs, no ands, no buts about it. Okay? And if you're going to have Steph Curry, you cannot just give him the ball and allow him to be the lead guard. He has to come off screens and or he won't be Steph Curry. Okay? If you said he's a point guard, well, you haven't watched him play. He is some version that, you just hadn't seen a combo guard have this level of influence on the game. Now he's not one of the first. He's probably, I can't recall basically when I've seen a combo guard have this level of influence on the game where his greatest weapon, if you will, is to come off screens and shoot. That's a significant thing that occurred during his career. You haven't seen a player have that level of influence. So when I hear people point guard conversation, I go, well, he may be the size of a point guard, but he certainly is not carrying the responsibility of what a point guard does night in and night out. Can he do that? Of course he can. But is he consistently doing that through the course of a 48-minute game? Oh no, you can't do that with him. He demands that he plays the way he plays. And if we don't allow him to play that way, then we're not utilizing him to his strength. That man can shoot and score. He can score with the best of them. So the way he plays, it's as interesting as I've seen. Because he's not a traditional, you can't just put him in a box. You got to let him be Steph Curry. I don't even think there's a way to define him as I've watched his career. Because he's not just an undersized two guard. And he's certainly not just a lead guard where he plays and distributes. And no, he's Steph Curry. I don't know what that means yet, but he's Steph Curry. I mean, I've never seen a player at his size, play with that level of freedom on the offensive end. On the ball, off the ball, with an ultra green light. I mean, Mo, it's pretty amazing to think what he's done at his size as a scorer, as the lead scorer in
It's
this
pretty
league.
unique. It is
It's
pretty unique.
that to me is a discussion where I would love to sit down and say, hey, you've been around the NBA your entire life. What gave you the idea that you couldn't be just the lead guard and you couldn't be just the two guard? Like, how did you combine the two? Because that's basically what he did. And he did it not just saying I can score with the ball in my hand. No, he's playing off the ball. So he's depending on someone else to pass him the ball.
Shout out to Draymond.
Shout out to That to me would be fascinating. That he's been around the NBA. His dad was a two guard. So he probably was like, my dad may be open, but if the point guard doesn't pass him the ball, or the guy who gets the most touches don't pass him the ball, what's that point? So he figured out how to not depend. So I just think it's fascinating from that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow with more from the Hoop Genius podcast. So make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple,
Can you
wherever
put
you
the
get your
glasses
podcasts
on?
from.
Can you put the glasses on to end the show properly?
We'd like to thank you all for tuning in to today's episode of the Hoop Genius podcast. Stay tuned. We have plenty more in store. We'll be back tomorrow. So subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. And until next time, get buckets.
Did someone actually do that?
Yep.